I'm so impressed. One of the great changes that has taken place during the time that I've been a Unitarian Universalist minister is that once upon a time you couldn't have silence. Unitarians just, nature and Unitarians abhor a vacuum. And any time you tried to do a meditation, you would have people talking through it. And there was a great amount of discomfort. And our songs today have talked and sung about the silence and what we can learn about ourselves and our lives by being quiet for a few moments and letting the silence come into our hearts and open up our hearts to real feelings and to real experiences. I'm going to confess, a social Darwinist when it comes to religion. I believe that rituals, that holidays, that holy days that survive for 500 years, 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 3,000 years may be good or may be bad, but they can't be dismissed because they will not survive amongst humans unless they touch us at some place that is deep. Not making a judgment of whether it's good or bad, only that it is important. Halloween is one of those holidays that gets trivialized because we live in a society that trivializes things. And of course, we sugarcoat it, literally sugarcoat it. But it deals with real stuff. It's about death. It's about ghosts. It's about the harvest at one end and the harvest of souls at the other end. And it is indicative of how we deal with some of our real anxieties. Now, little babies, they tell me, I don't really remember this, are born with only two natural inborn fears. One of them is falling, and the other one is fire. They are not born with the greatest American fear up until 2 weeks ago, which was public speaking, and they were not born with the fear of the falling stock market. They weren't born with a fear of low self-esteem. They probably had some residual fear of abandonment, which somewhere in the DNA code. But most of our fears we learn. That doesn't make them unreal, and it doesn't make them unimportant. We in the West have a kind of natural fear of death that we have learned over a period of time. And, of course, whatever rational system I have or whatever religious system I have, I share some of that. I'm not eager to explore that unknown country from which no traveler returns. That's an interesting passage, by the way. You all recognize Hamlet, the undiscovered country. And he's talking about nobody comes back from that undiscovered country. And this is two acts after he has met his father on the parapet. And so the question comes up for people who study literature, because like people who study religion, you have to keep the conversation going and write books and articles or else the entire intellectual world collapses. So there are big fights about was it a mistake? Did Shakespeare not know what he was saying? Or was he cutting and pasting and he really meant that to be in the first act? I find that explanation really difficult to deal with. But the explanation that I like, and as with things religious, it's not the only explanation, was that his father's ghost was not his father. And it wasn't a coming back. It was like the ghosts that all of us carry with us, whose voices we hear in the night, whose figures we see in the fog, who visit us in our dreams, and sometimes in our waking memories at 3 o'clock in the morning. We have a very interesting attitude towards ghosts, towards religion, towards Halloween, towards All Hallows, and the Mexican Day of the Dead. They're slightly different, but they go back to extremely ancient roots. They go back partially to the idea that there is another side. I must tell you that when I have been with people in extremis, when I have been with people who were dying, when I've been with people as they died, almost all of them, regardless of theology, regardless of philosophy, regardless of what they believed in their heads, had a sense that they were going to close their eyes here and open them somewhere else. I state this not as a teaching of the Unitarian Universalist Association or this church, but an observation about how we deal with the sense of our own mortality and how it is that there are these holidays and really holy days that deal with that mystery of what happens, what happens later. The idea that there is, at certain times, the membrane between this world and the next becomes permeable. It thins out, it stretches, and the dead can come and visit us. And maybe we can go and visit them, and there is a communion of memory and of souls and so forth. I ask you to take this not at all literally, but to take it seriously in that social Darwinian sense in which I offer it, which is this seems to be an instinct that goes throughout almost every culture. There are some Eastern cultures and religions that seek release and the complete loss of identity from this chain, this wheel of existence. But for the most part, most people would like to believe that something else goes on. I don't know about that. I only know that with my various near-death experiences, and I've had two of them, neither of which was terrifying, and neither of which was particularly enjoyable. But it is an interesting view to see your body from the top of the ER and look down on it and just wonder whether this is the end. And I'm glad to report that it wasn't. Now, come on. Denial is one of the great things to deal with. You know, this could all be a dream. This could be incident at Owl Creek Ridge. I could have died, and this could all just be part of my fantasy. It's the ultimate solipsism. We are uncomfortable, understandably, with the idea of mortality. We're uncomfortable, understandably, with the idea that there are ghosts, that somebody is watching and can come back and haunt us. One of the things that I take a great deal of comfort from is my ghosts. I know my ghosts. My ghosts love me. And why would I want to keep them away? Why is it at Halloween that when our ghosts show up symbolically wearing these pagan colors and wearing black hats in a church, I mean, really, when they show up, we give them candy to make them go away? It seems to me that the Day of the Dead, Mexican Day of the Dead, which deals with the same issue, has so much greater wisdom in it because it says, don't go away. We're going to go out and we're going to create an ofrenda. We're going to do a shrine. We're going to remember you. We're going to summon you. And we're even going to feed you. We're not going to bribe you to go away. We're going to create a meal and bribe you to come and bless our lives with your memories. It's something sacred that we remember. Part of our society that deals with a tremendous fear of pain and of anxiety. Now, I'm not a masochist. I don't love pain. I don't enjoy anxiety most of the time. A lot of people enjoy anxiety. I mean, look at the thrill rides, look at extreme sports, look at gambling. All of these things where you get that adrenaline, epinephrine rush of anxiety. All of the ways that we pretend to put ourselves in danger in a world that is actually dangerous is maybe a little bit perverse. But I don't particularly enjoy anxiety. I was raised on it; it's mother's milk. But it's not fun. But I do invite it, and it seems to me that that's the wisdom of the Day of the Dead. It is to invite the ghosts. We don't want to have anxiety. We don't want to have pain. That seems like something obvious. But it's not as obvious as it seems. Would any of us here choose to have a life without pain? Would we choose to have a life without having things that are precious enough that we are anxious about their renewal? Would we choose to have a life without grief, without heartbreak, that we wouldn't have anybody whose removal from our physical lives wouldn't devastate us and break our hearts? What is the point of a heart if it is not vulnerable? What is the point of skin if it's hidden underneath armor? If I could take a pill and never feel physical pain, anxiety, emotional pain, or grief, I promise you I would not take it. And I suspect that relatively few people here would take it. I think you would think about it hard and ask, well, just to say, make bargains with it and its side effect. Well, can I feel just a little bit so that I would be upset and not really devastated, take the edge off it? Those conversations I understand. But to be anxious is to be alive. To have a heart that can be broken is to be more fully alive than when we protect ourselves, when we run and we hide from the dangers, from the fears, from all of those things in the world that can keep us awake at 3 o'clock in the morning. We don't want to run from everything that keeps us awake at 3 o'clock in the morning, or we wouldn't have any babies. Well, sometimes at 3 o'clock in the morning we might want to run, but it's only an impulse and we don't actually do it because we understand that crying baby is part of our lives and part of our hearts, part of our future. And that's the way I think we are and can be, and I dare say should be, with those other things that trouble us in the middle of the night, that trouble us in the middle of our lives. The most useful book that I ever read on mourning and grieving was a book called How to Survive the Loss of a Love. And one of the things that it talked about was how in our normal society we try not to think about the things that bother us, that we don't have time for the pain, that we're afraid of the pain. And its advice is lean into the pain. Accept it as the price that we pay for having had people near us and part of our lives and part of our hearts. When I have read about and studied for certain classes that I teach on politics and history and terrorism, and I've read material on torture, one of the themes that keeps coming up again and again is the fear of the pain being greater than the pain. The anticipation of catastrophe, of disaster, of what's going to happen next, being something that makes most of us really anxious and sometimes even crazy. But most of us deal well with disaster and catastrophe. Most of us understand that we don't get over the terrible things that may happen, but we get through them. We don't deny the pain, we don't deny the fear, but we take it in and make it a part of our lives in a constructive kind of way. The man that I studied with in Vienna, Viktor Frankl, wrote about what he called paradoxical intent. And it was the idea that, and you've all heard variations of this, if I tell you, I'll give you $5 if you don't think of elephants for the next 5 minutes, you've got elephants running across your forehead. If And that's a technique that so many of us use. We try to say, well, you know, I don't have time. I don't want to think about it. Oh, for God's sakes, I don't want to think about this at 3 o'clock in the morning. If you make a date with the ghosts, with the goblins, if you ring their bell instead of waiting for them to ring your bell and invite them into your hearts, it takes away that fear of anxiety. It takes away that terrible anticipation, and you deal with the issue. And you know what often happens, and what Frankl held, and what I have found to be true, at least for me, is that when I invite my anxieties in, they're usually pretty polite. They don't stay a whole long time. I invite them in, they show up, they sit down, I go through the worst case scenario with my anxiety and my hysteria, and after a while, my problems get really boring even to me. I'm not even talking about sharing them with anybody else and watching my wife's eyes glaze over if I want to share some of that stuff. But they become boring to me. It doesn't make them go away, but it does take the sting out. And it does take the anticipation of pain away. And I know that I can get through 3 o'clock to 3:05. Maybe it's going to take from 3:05 to 3:11. But it's okay, because 3 to 3:05 wasn't that terrible once I said, come on down. I think that part of the great wisdom, and it comes from pagan times, and let me actually say something controversial. People are always complaining in more orthodox religious situations about Halloween as being a pagan holiday. Of course it's a pagan holiday. And somebody find me a religious holiday that isn't a pagan holiday. They've all come out of the human experience of fertility, of birth, of death, of fear, of joy, of celebration. The dates of our great holidays and holy days in the Northern Hemisphere tend to cluster from religion to religion throughout time. Halloween, All Hallows, Day of the Dead, all come from earlier materials, earlier sources, because while we might not have been born with the fear of ghosts and the fear of death, we learned it pretty quickly. And so the question becomes a really simple one. Banish and exercise, postpone, maybe I'll think about that tomorrow, or cook a nice meal, open up the door, and invite them in. I like to invite my ghosts. I like the sound of their voice. I even understand that, to use another Mexican reference, that I will drink the bittersweet chocolate of memory. And in drinking the bittersweet chocolate of memory, I will be sharing my life with theirs. Is there life after death? I have no idea. Is there any sure and certain teachings about where we go, our loved ones go? Not as far as I'm concerned. But do I know that every day the people who have loved me, who have formed me, who have shaped me, who have criticized me, who have guided me, are they with me and alive in me every single day? And the people who conceived me and gave birth to me, I carry around in good times and in bad. And I begin to see their faces in the mirror and hear their voices in my own. And I carry them warm and alive, a source of love, a source of joy, a source of meaning, whom I would not buy off with a piece of candy, but I would offer whatever sweetness memory can bring to summon them back into my heart and to recognize them forever alive as long as my heart beats.